We will start today with a work session on Senate Bill 208. Council.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 208 comes to you, I believe, from the Department of Justice. What it does is permits the Attorney General to enforce a federal do-no-call registry, identifies legislative findings and purposes of telephone solicitation statutes to cause emergency, takes effect upon passage. You have two sets of amendments before you, Madam Chair, members of the committee, the -2 and the -7. The -2 amendments differs the language contained in legislative findings in section of the bill, redefines telephone solicitation, establishes business relationships defined as one of the based on consumers purchased within the last 18 months prior to the call.
Just a minute. Does the -7 amendment take into...
Let me have the -7
amendment. Does that supersede the -2? Does that include...
Madam Chair, I would suggest that you bring up the Department of Justice. Yes, it does. It does supersede the -7?
Okay. So we won't even talk about the -2, will we?
You said it does supersede the -7.
No, the -7 supersedes the
-2.
Yeah. Okay. Could we have Mr. Neely come on up here in case people have questions?
He was hiding in the back.
The -7 is the only one in play then?
Excuse me?
The -7 is the only one in play.
Yes.
Correct.
Mr. Neely, would you please tell us about the -7 amendments?
I will, Madam Chair. For the record, Kevin Neely, Executive Assistant to Attorney General Hardy Myers at the Department of Justice. The -7s are compromise agreements that essentially import the federal no-call provisions into Oregon state law. They do not put it in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act. They put it in essentially the unlawful telephone solicitation piece of Oregon state law. They then give the Attorney General the authority to enter into what are called assurances of voluntary compliance, and those are essentially pre-litigation settlements. This bill, as I said, represents an agreement, as far as I know, between at least some of the folks in the telecommunications area and the Department of Justice. We've worked principally with Paul Cosgrove on this.
So for the record, this provides the advantage of having the Attorney General able to enforce the law as opposed to having the federal government enforce the law. The cases can be brought to state court, and yet from the solicitor's standpoint, there's only one set of requirements. It's the national requirements. Those have been imported into state law. Is that correct?
Madam Chair, that's about 99.9% correct. The only adjustment I'd make to that is under current law, the state can bring an action. We just can't bring an action in state court.
Correct.
And what this does is clarify that we can bring an action in state court.
Okay. Thank you. Senator Walker.
Thank you, Madam Chair. So there is still a private right of action available, or only to the Attorney General through an ABC?
Madam Chair, Senator Walker, I'm not sure I have the answer to your question. I apologize. I know if it was in the Unlawful Trade Practices Act, there would be a private right of action. I don't know if the federal provision has a provision for a private cause of action. But I can tell you that where it's placed into Oregon state law would not entitle a private right.
Did you have a follow-up?
Well, I am just concerned. I don't want consumers to get gypped. I already think they get gypped in the federal law.
In federal court, yeah. It's a
who's got the money and the time to go to federal court?
Under the old law, when Oregon had their law, did you see many private rights of action pursued?
Madam Chair, I'm not sure that we would have seen any. I am unaware of any independent actions that took place under Oregon law, but keep in mind that we took action on every single complaint that was sent into our office when the law was exclusively an Oregon program. And so in that spirit, I'm not sure there would have been a need for a consumer to take action. Now, I'm not sure that based on this current iteration that we'll be taking action in every single case, but it gives us, again, we believe, at least some additional authority to take some action. I think were it a perfect world, we try and get more, but again, this is the agreement that we were able to reach with some of the other parties.
Okay. Thank you very much. I think it's been a long time at the negotiating table here, and I think we have a product here that will have support in the other chamber if we get it through the Senate because of the single requirement. Senator Whitsitt.
Chair Burdick, a question for Mr. Neely. Are any portion of the fines or settlements received by the Attorney General in this act?
Madam Chair, Senator Whitsitt, I think your question was, are any portion of the fines, in this instance, I'm not exactly sure where the fines would go if fines were levied as the result of litigation that occurred. I think they probably go into one of the challenges we face here is it's not clear from the provisions here that there is a state right to fine. We can fine certainly under the federal law. The federal law permits us to fine up to $11,000 per violation, and those fines go back to the federal government. The key here for the Department of Justice is to have the authority to enter into assurances of voluntary compliance. As I mentioned earlier, when we do enter into assurances of voluntary compliance, in general, those assurances include some sort of monetary amount that would be directed to the Department of Justice Consumer Protection and Education Revolving Account. So I think the answer to your question is yes, but keep in mind that's not related to the fine aspect that's available under federal law. That's more related to any monetary settlement that the state would reach with a offender.
Okay.
The short answer is yes, then.
The short answer is yes.
Thank you. And then the other question, you said in your negotiations that several parties had agreed to this piece of legislation. Were there parties that did not agree, and could you enumerate those, please?
Madam Chair, Senator, I'm not sure. I don't have an answer to that question. I worked, as I said, with Paul Cosgrove on these amendments, and I think that he, like I, swallowing them, and it's a good result for a very, we think, an important program for the state. And I can't speak for the many, many representatives from the other telecommunications companies that are no doubt sitting behind me.
I've actually reached out to a couple of the other companies and did not get any opposition, and certainly no one has come to me. That doesn't mean that they're not out there, but as far as we know, this is a...
You could be out there working. You like to work.
Okay, thank you. Are there other questions from the committee? Thank you. Senator Starr, you have these -7 amendments in front of you.
That I do, Madam Chair. I would move the -7 amendment to Senate Bill 208.
Senator Starr moves the -7 amendments to Senate Bill 208. Is there any discussion? Any objection? Oh, okay. Okay, so ordered. Senator Starr. Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 208 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Is there any discussion? Senator Beyer.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'll be a no on the bill. I didn't like turning the list over to the feds 2 years ago, and by God, you get what you live with, or you live with what you get. And so I say, yeah, no.
Thank you. Do you have any discussion? Okay. Would you please call the roll? Thank you. On the due pass recommendation for extended Senate Bill 208 to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
As amended.
Senator Beyer?
No.
Senator Przanski?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burdick?
Aye.
Four ayes, two nays, and one excuse.
Thank you, and I think I will take the rare privilege of carrying this bill after 2 years of work. Okay. Now we will open... Let's do... work session. Shut up, bro. We'll do it. We're going to do... Oh, no. We're going to do 5:48. I was going to do it anyway. The hours changed because you said that. We'll open a work session.
It's 2:64 on a Tuesday.
It's not here. Okay. I got one, too, and I'll look.
Okay.
We will open a work session at this time on Senate Bill 548. Counsel.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 548 comes to you from Senator Prozanski, modifies crime of interfering with police officer by deleting language previously held unconstitutional that makes it illegal to refuse to obey a lawful order by a police officer. I would probably ask a little bit of direction here from Senator Prozanski. I have both the dash one and dash two amendments in my file, and I'm not sure which one dash one and two.
Yes.
So the committee should consider both dash one and two. I apologize. Joe was out sick today, and I'm filling in. So
you're doing a fabulous job, Counsel.
Only confused half the time, Hunter.
Okay, Senator Prozanski, would you like to say elaborate, if you would, on the bill itself and the dash one and two amendments?
Yes, thank you, Madam Chair. The dash ones is what we first came out with as to making a designation to really tighten up the language as to when the law would apply, and it basically would apply to intentionally and knowingly enters and remains within a designated, and I use the word designated, that is set off crime scene without the permission of a peace officer. Or, again, intentionally or knowingly interferes with a peace officer lawfully engaged in the investigation of a crime or traffic collision. Mm-hmm. We're trying to narrow the scope, and if you remember, the Court of Appeals ruled in a case this end of last year saying that there were some issues as to the vagueness and the concern about the broadness of the existing statute being used in a way that could jeopardize someone's constitutionally protected activity. That's what the dash two takes care of. It basically puts in place that a person who is acting within their constitutional protected activities, such as freedom of speech, freedom of assembly, that this statute would not be able to be used against them if it's in that limited place. And so we feel that with the dash ones and the dash twos, will actually narrow the scope of the interfering with a peace officer statute that has been some problems, and there's also will protect the issues as constitutionally protected activity.
Thank you for that clear and concise summary. Are there any questions from the committee? I'm going to direct them to Senator Prozanski if there are. Okay, Senator Starr, we have a dash one amendment and a dash two.
Madam Chair, move the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 548.
Senator Starr has moved the dash one amendment to Senate Bill 548. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move dash two amendment to Senate Bill 548.
Senator Starr has moved the dash two amendment to Senate Bill 548. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 548 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 548 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Who should we have carry this? I wonder. Senator Prozanski.
Oh, thank you. It'll be my pleasure.
Okay. Well, Senator Deckard has entered the room, so I think it's safe to enter a... to
doggy begin. Time.
It's dog day afternoon yet again. Ray do. We will open a work session.
Are we going to add cats to this, Madam Chair?
Add what?
Burying cats.
Cats. We will add no cats to this bill, you know, and that's final.
How about ferrets and monkeys?
We will open a work session on Senate Bill 844. Counsel.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 844 comes from Senator Deckard, and it would increase penalty for dog keeper who maintains public nuisance by keeping dogs at the like persons. You have the dash one and dash two amendments in front of you. The dash one lists factors that may be used to determine the dog is potentially dangerous or dangerous. The dash two amendments contain all the same of the dash one, but specify a knowing mental state for the misdemeanor offense outlined in the measure.
So it's really the dash two amendments we'll be looking at today.
Okay.
Is that correct?
Dash two.
Senator Deckard, would you and Susie like to come up and answer any questions that we might have?
Susie and Senator Deckard.
Where's the
Well, we need Susie. We need Susie up here at least.
We absolutely have to have Susie. Senator Deckard is optional.
I might. I think the chance it has better chance with just.
Except she kind of ruined her reputation with me a little bit when she started going after these cats. Do you have someone else you want to bring up?
Could legislative council come up as well?
Okay, please. If anybody talks, they have to identify themselves for the record.
And speak louder.
Could we hear I believe we're only talking about the Dash 2 amendments. Is that correct? No nods. You have to identify yourself for the record and say so.
My name is Susie Funkhauser, legislative assistant for Senator Deckard. I believe the consensus of the committee was the Dash 2 amendments.
Okay. Thank you very much. Senator Deckard, is there anything you wanted to add? Are there questions from the committee? Well, we have the Dash 2 amendments, you described them a little bit. Maybe we could have a fuller description of the Dash 2 amendments. Is that why you brought Legislative Council up?
Madam Chair, Ryan Deckard, State Senator from all of Beaverton now that it's we've solved the annexation issue. Yes, I mean, the two things I would say, if we could let council just talk about the amendments, this is really a product of a consensus work group. We, at the direction of the chair, we and Susie did the real work on this, and got a work group together with all the parties that were interested and came up with what you see before you is the Dash 2 working, and thank the members of the committee for their very valuable suggestions on perfecting this bill and making it what you see before you in the Dash 2s. And with that, I'll turn it over to the able council.
We don't get called valuable very often, so thank you, Senator Decker. Welcome to the committee.
Good afternoon, Madam Chair, members. I'm Chuck Taylor, Deputy Legislative Counsel. And I came prepared to answer questions, but not to testify. So.
Okay.
Section 1 in the amendments is a related but separate issue dealing with civil liability. I believe there was some question at an earlier hearing concerning the exception that is created in that it is a separate exception dealing with trespassers and persons who are wrongfully assaulting the dog. The similar exception, which was being sought, I believe, at the last hearing, is in Section 7. To apply for sections 2 through 9 and the amendments to Chapter 609. The amendments basically allow a county governing body or a dog control board or a court to find that a dog is potentially dangerous or dangerous if certain criteria are met and to impose restrictions on the keeping of the dog, or if the dog is a dangerous dog, then the dog may, or in some cases, has to be euthanized. It also provides 2-level of criminal sanctions for a person who maintains a potentially dangerous dog, and again 2 levels of sanctions for a person who maintains a dangerous dog. Those vary according to whether the person's a repeat offender or not. And if there are any questions I could answer, I'd be happy to do so.
Any questions? Okay. Before Senator Pruszynski gets a chance to start doing his little dog and pony show, Senator Starr, do you have an opinion on the Dash 2 amendments?
You know, I haven't really digested those. I should have been more diligent. But it appears to me that we have effectively identified guard dogs, dogs that are intended for the protection of property of the owner, from which public could be excluded. I don't this point have any question or any real concern with moving the dash two amendments as they are proposed.
Okay, is that a motion, Senator Starr?
I would move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 844.
Senator Starr has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 844. Is there any discussion? Senator Byers.
Madam Chair, I guess I'd like to ask a question I asked Joe last week and he couldn't answer it. But under current law, if we do nothing, the county currently are granted authority by the state to take actions on dangerous dogs without necessarily calling them that, as this does, and do what they need to take care of dogs. I mean, that's my understanding. Is that, would you concur with that, Taylor?
Chair Burdick, Senator Beyer, the current law provides that if a county ordinance is contrary to the state law, the county ordinance basically overrides the state statutes. So the county would have a great deal of leeway in how it wants to deal with the dogs. If there were no contrary statute, then under the current state statutes, if the keeper of the dog was not charged with maintaining a nuisance, the decision would fall to the county governing board on how to dispose of the dog. And we do have statutory guidelines regarding that. If the keeper of the dog is charged with maintaining a nuisance, the duty falls to the court.
And those have to be proven in the current law with plain convincing, is that right? Versus this will require a higher level of proof for having a knowingly provision in it.
Chairman Senator Beyer, with regard to a court convicting a person for maintaining a dangerous dog as opposed to the current violation of maintaining a public nuisance, your standard of proof is going to stay the same for the criminal, which would be the beyond a reasonable doubt standard. Your culpable mental state, in the absence of any contrary expression in the statute, is going to be criminal negligence. In the dash twos, we change that and we say that for the repeat offenders, they have to have a knowing mental state, which is a harder to prove situation.
Thank you.
Thank you. Senator Pruszynski.
Sounds like we're still at beyond a reasonable doubt. Is this the knowledge element is knowingly versus criminally negligently, so you can act without having the knowledge. So that's the threshold difference. I mean, we still keep the same standard of proof as what I'm hearing. But if it's in a civil setting, we don't use beyond a reasonable doubt. We either use preponderance or clear and convincing.
Chair Burdick, Senator Pruszynski, yes, you're speaking now of what the county does,
right?
As far
I just want to make
in
sure.
The county, yeah, in the county instance, there would not be any charge leveled against the keeper of the dog. So it's going to be strictly a disposition of the animal.
Right.
In a civil context.
Yes.
Thank you. Does that answer your question?
It did.
Thank you. Senator Whitsitt.
Chair Burdick, on page 2, line 10, I brought this up the other day, and this hasn't been changed. It says, without provocation, inflicts bodily injury to a person that is less severe than a serious bodily injury. And it says nothing about being on your premises or off your premises. It would cause me not to support this bill. And the other, it seems somehow ludicrous that we're writing a bill like this and introducing rules.
Can you speak up? Look at you.
It seems somewhat ludicrous to me that we're going through a bill here with some 15 pages regarding dogs and we're introducing rules at the same time in the state. But going back to the specific problem is, again, on page 2, line 10, without provocation inflicts bodily injury to a person that is less severe than a serious bodily injury. Something that's less than a serious bodily injury is anything that requires two sutures. I mean, your local Pekingese could cause that damage easily, or a Chihuahua.
Do you want to respond to that, Senator Deckard or Susie?
Susie wanted to point out.
Chair Burdick and members of the committee,
can you speak up a little?
Yes, sorry. Joe O'Leary and I spoke about your concern after the last work session, and we believe, maybe Chuck Taylor can also comment on this, but on page 5, line 28, it talks about trespassing, and so that would be an exemption that if you're trespassing on someone's property, then this condition of potentially dangerous dog would not apply.
Madam Chair.
Senator Whitsitt.
Then the question that begs answering is why is, while not on property, from which the keeper may lawfully exclude others, included in A and C, but not in B?
Chair Burdick, Senator Whitsitt, the Section 7 applies if the dog is so that you cannot find the dog potentially dangerous or dangerous if the dog inflicted injury or killed under these circumstances, and it excludes when a person is committing a trespass on premises from which the keeper may exclude others. In the one that you are pointing to, which is in the definition of potentially dangerous dog, under A, the dog is not killing or injuring the person, so Section 7 would not create an exemption for that paragraph, and that's why it's included expressly there.
Madam Chair, just on the other point, and I thank Mr. Taylor for clarifying that issue. On the wolf issue, we would have been more than happy to at any point entertain. What we did is we got a group together representing the veterinarians, the animal control officers, and folks from the counties and others, and tried to come up with what was a consensus from the first bill we brought. And we found the elements that all parties could come together on what they said was a need, basically, and that's what you see before you in the dash two, is of getting a statewide policy in place that deals with these situations. I would be more than happy to not slow this down, but include that discussion in that work group. It's one that actually functioned very well with Ms. Funkenhauser providing a lot of guidance with it, but Commissioner Soa and the veterinarians were there, and I'd be more than happy to include any discussion of wolves in that as this bill travels over to the House, and we can easily get the work group back together and try to develop a consensus around that.
We call it the wolf at the door bill. All right, are there any questions, discussion? Okay, the Chair is very interested in moving this bill along. Senator Starr, do you have a motion? Oh, we move the amendment.
Yeah, I think we still need to vote on the amendments.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying.
Yeah, for amendments were approved.
So we need to move the bill along.
No, first we haven't adopted the amendment. We had to adopt the amendment.
Oh, we didn't?
No, we just called it for discussion.
Oh, okay. I'm sorry. Thank you. Okay. Is there objection to the amendment? Senator Byer objects. I'm going to call the roll. Dale, thanks. We don't usually discuss amendments as much. Go ahead.
Senator Byer?
Aye.
Senator Brzezinski?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burdick?
Aye. Okay, Senator Starr.
Move that bill.
844 is amended to the floor with your past recommendations.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 844 is amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objections? Yes.
Good bill.
I'm a no.
Dale, would you call the roll, please?
Senator Beyer?
No.
Senator Pruszynski?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Pain. Pain. Yeah, it was pain.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burdick?
Aye.
Four ayes, two nays, one excused.
Okay, and Senator Deckert will do us
the
wonderful
dog.
Favor of carrying this bill on the Senate floor.
You got the dog.
So ordered. Okay, next we will.
Madam Chair, he will give credit to Susie, I hope.
I don't think that's been a problem in this situation. Senator Deckert has been very good about that. And thanks for everyone who worked so hard on this bill. I really appreciate it. Okay, I want to get rid of these, but are we still doing two bills or just one?
This one is going to require
Okay, I think we'll start the work session on, open a work session on Senate Bill 234. And could we have Wendy come up, and we've gone back and forth and forth and back on combining bills and uncombining them and recombining them. So I just want to see where we are today. Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Chair Burdick. Members of the committee, for the record, my name is Wendy Johnson. I'm the Deputy Director of the Oregon Law Commission.
Okay. Council, why don't you go through the amendments that we have on... We're a little disadvantaged because we changed council, so I want to try to lighten the load on Mr. Taylor here.
Madam Chair, if I could recommend that Renee Schinkel and Shaney Fuller come up. I talked to Renee earlier. I think there are at least three sets of amendments on the bill. This relates to an issue beyond the bill, the amendments that pertain to determination of putative fathers and DNA tests, both for putative fathers and for people involved in a marital situation as it relates to DNA tests, as it relates to kids. And
okay.
I think it would be best if they came up.
Please do, Ms. Schinkel. I see a whole stack of amendments on these, and I know that people have worked very hard to reach consensus on this. Welcome to the committee.
Chair Burdick, members of the committee, for the record, Ron L. Schenkel with the Department of Justice. I'll just tell you which amendments you have before you and then turn it back over to Wendy from the Law Commission. You should have before you some dash 2 amendments. Those are what we're referring to as the technical cleanup amendments to the original Law Commission's putative father bill that were in fact discussed at the public hearing.
And was that 234 or 229?
234,
okay.
Chair Burdick.
All right.
Then you have the dash 3 and dash 4, also which were discussed on Senate Bill 234 at the original public hearing and are based on comments by the constituent Lane Barlow with Oregon Men's Association. The dash 3 has to do with adding some clarifying language about appeals. It's not a law change, it's just a clarification in the text, and also incorporates the dash 2s. That is a policy choice for the committee whether or not they want that clarification. Mm-hmm. The dash 4 also coming from Lane Barlow has to do with ensuring that notice is given to the fathers of their rights to establish paternity. Again, not a law change, just a clarification. That one, too, incorporates the dash 2s. So from the original bill, you have the dash 2, 3, and 4 as choices before you. Dash 2, Wendy, I believe, will speak to, and 3 and 4 came from that constituent, or based on his testimony, I should say.
Okay, so as I understand it, both the dash 3 and the dash 4 are individual policy matters, but they both incorporate the dash 2. So if we adopt either one or both of those, we don't need the dash 2. Is that correct?
Senator Burdick, that's correct.
Okay. All right.
And then finally, Chair Burdick and members of the committee, you have a dash 6, which actually replaces the dash 5s, if you happen to have those in your file. The dash 6 is the piece that Council Taylor was referring to. Those are compromise amendments. The genesis of those are House Bill 2941 in the House chamber. Chair Krieger asked myself and constituent Matt Minahan and the Oregon Legal Center, Oregon Judicial Department, several of us got together, and these are compromise amendments seeking that they be added to the bill. There was testimony on this at your original public hearing, but the work was primarily done based on a work group in the other chamber.
Okay, and can I get the Law Commission position on the dash 6 amendments?
Senator Burdick, members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Wendy Johnson with the Oregon Law Commission. The commission's position is the dash 2 amendments are amendments that were approved by the commission. They're amendments that essentially finish up the bill. The Law Commission strives to pre-session file all our bills, and this bill wasn't quite finished before that pre-session filing deadline. So the dash 2s finish up the bill, just tie up the loose ends. The commission does not take a position on amendments that are on different subjects or are issues that are just that have not been through the commission, so we can neither oppose nor support. We remain neutral on all those amendments. So with respect to the dash 3 and 4 and now 6 that are before you, the commission does not have a position.
Okay. As I understand it, the dash 6 amendments have a sunset clause in them. A two-year sunset?
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, that is correct. One of the compromises that we made, because this is a large topic of paternity reopening, was to look at it during the next 2 years. There will be a Law Commission work group related to this topic as well. So between testing out some court cases and having that further work group analysis, we think we'll be ready to come back with further legislation.
So to sum it up, the dash 6 is a consensus document, but is not the final word on the subject because it sunsets in 2 years, and the Law Commission does intend to take this issue up in more depth.
Chair, voting members of the committee, just to explain, coincidentally almost, the Law Commission had already approved a project to look at paternity broader with the goal of 2007 legislation, and the focus is on the Uniform Parentage Act and all the issues that are involved there. The bill before you originally, Senate Bill 234, was a procedure bill regarding notice and how paternity is established in juvenile court, so it was a very narrow issue for this session. So, in short, for 2007, the commission does plan to look at all the issues regarding paternity in the form of this proposal, a proposal that was brought to the commission by the Child Support Program and involve all the parties with that issue. But the commission does not have a position on the dash 6 that do look at one narrow issue of a couple of issues of paternity regarding the conclusive presumption. But the commission does not have a position on that at this point because the commission hasn't looked at it.
Okay. This is, and I've talked to Chair Krieger in the House on this. This bill found this vehicle because of relating clause reasons. And I have, it's a delicate compromise, and I have Chair Krieger's assurances that this is the work group product. If we choose to approve it, will not be changed significantly in the House. So this is a big package of things for everyone to look at. And if we have had, I've talked to Wendy and Brunel in some depth, and if the rest of you are comfortable working our way through, I think what they're looking for in the House is the dash 3, the dash 4, and the dash 6 amendments, as I understand it. Is that correct?
Chair Burdick, the House has not looked at the dash 3 and dash 4. Those were separate issues raised by another constituent group. The dash 2, as Wendy said, were originally the Law Commission amendments, and the House has looked at the dash 5 or 6, depending on which version
okay.
you have.
So I guess I misunderstood then. So the dash 3 and 4... as you described them, those are just clarifying existing requirements?
Chair Burdick and members of the committee, that's correct. Katie Garrett, who was the chair of the work group on the putative father juvenile code work group, met with Lamb Barlow, and while legally his issues were covered in the original bill, he felt it would we could better clarify in the law. So that is the resulting dash 3 and dash 4. If you want to adjust language, you would adopt either or both of those.
Okay, and Senator Pazansky.
I wonder if we can just, on what the dash 3 is going to clarify versus what the dash 4s will clarify, so we know what if we think we need them both or
correct.
Either.
Again, members of the committee, my name is Shaney Fuller, and I am with the Oregon Child Support Program with the Department of Justice, and I work with Katie Garrett and Lane Barlow on the amendments. And in the dash 3s, if you'll look to page 5, line 18 there, it adds when the putative father is getting served with a summons, it says that if he was filed a petition affiliation which was dismissed, that that putative father does not need to be served with the summons. However, Mr. Barlow wanted added there at the end, and no appeal of the judgment or order is pending, to ensure that that putative father's appeal rights had passed before this takes effect, that he does not have to be served with the summons.
And so that was the already in inherent in the existing law, is that correct?
Yeah, I believe that it is inherent, but he wanted that clarified, and that clarification does add clarity. Okay.
And that's it for the dash?
That is, it does the same thing over on page 8, mm-hmm. but that is the extent of what the dash 3 amendments add.
Okay. And then the dash 4s?
The dash 4s on page 14 of dash 4, lines 12 through 22. When appropriate, the court shall inform a man before the court claiming to be the father that paternity establishment services may be available through the administrator. And that is the Oregon Child Support Program who provides paternity establishment services, and he wanted to ensure that the court was informing the party that they had that service available to them.
And did the courts weigh in on that requirement? Were the courts shown this?
I believe they were. The committee, they were. I wouldn't say all of the courts, but we did hear feedback from some, at least a Multnomah County judge and the Judicial Department. And while they normally don't like a requirement that says the court shall inform, in this limited circumstance, they didn't have a problem with it. And also because it doesn't happen that often.
Okay, thank you for that. This has been kind of a complicated issue. So I think we could go ahead and consider the dash 3, 4, and 6 amendments. Senator Starr, have you had a chance to look at these over? Senator Byer.
Could I clarify? My understanding is we either take the 3s or the 4s, not both.
No, the 3s and 4s are separate. Mm-hmm. Separate issues. But they both include the dash 2s.
I understood both, but let's get clarification. I thought she just described to us the differences between the 3 and the 4s. It's only the areas that on pages, was it page 5? The last page, page 8 and page 5, I thought is what she said, are the only differences between the 3s and the 4s.
The 3 and the 4s are not exclusive. The 3s just contain that appeal provision, and the 4s just contain that notice provision. So if you wanted to adopt everything today, you would need to adopt the 3, the 4, and the 6.
Okay, I was confused.
4 and 6 gives us clarification on two specific points, if I heard that correct.
3 and 4,
excuse me. I said 6, didn't I?
Yeah. And then 6 is the policy change that we've worked with Representative Krieger on that has the sunset.
Okay. So 3, 4, and 6.
Yeah. Whew. Senator Starr, do you have a motion on the dash 3s, for example?
What happens if we give them 2 more years to study this issue?
Well, they've already taken it, I think.
Oh, wow. Three, four, and six you're thinking about.
That's what I'm thinking about, and we've had them all described. I haven't talked to committee members on these. I think probably the six are the most substantive change, but it also has a sunset. So the dash twos are the, if we didn't do anything else, we'd need to do the dash twos and to do the law commission bill as it was originally.
I guess we're as soon as Star says, let the whole thing die.
Well, there's nothing wrong with a cleanup, Senator Beyer.
Chair Burdick, if it would help, I could explain again what the need is for 234 to start with. If the members
would that be helpful, Senator Starr and Senator Byron?
That would be helpful. But the dash threes and fours are repetitive in several sections, are they not?
Senator Starr, members of the committee, yes, they are exactly identical to the twos, except that the threes address that small appeal issue in addition to the dash twos. And then for the dash fours, they have all the dash twos and also add the requirement for the court to give notice. So instead of just having a little notice, one page amendment, or instead of having the appeal notice as another amendment, legislative council has drafted them to include all of the amendments so that you would have a choice.
Senator Starr, I think the easy way to explain it, there's a dash twos that complete the bill, that finish the bill up. And then there are two policy options included in the dash three and the dash four to clear up existing statute. But the dash twos are, if we adopt either the three or the four or both, the dash twos are included in that. And I presume in the drafting we would delete out the repetitions. In other words, they wouldn't write it in there twice.
Council?
Madam Chair, if the committee decides to adopt three amendments, what I do is I send a memo to Legislative Council's office asking them to combine all three amendments, so that's correct. You would not have the repetitive material in there.
Yeah, I mean, Madam Chair, for instance, and I don't know if this matters or not, but if you adopt the dash threes, you've eliminated the rest of the bill as drafted. So there's no place to put a section six in with the dash sixes. So, in effect, these three amendments can't go together in the same bill. LC would then have to draft a dash seven, which will be printed that when, as it comes forward, it's going to reconcile these three amendments together.
Wait a second.
Because as the draft, the dash sixes as drafted, they have a section six, but the dash threes and dash fours go through section nine, I thought, or eight already. So,
well, you know, I just wish we'd had a dash two standalone and dash three and four standalone and six standalone, and then that would have maybe solved the problem. I don't know. That's a drafting issue. Council, do you have any? I don't see where you're finding the whole bill deleted.
Well, my point, Madam Chair, is that if it comes forward, you know, we can do that. We can adopt all three amendments. So when it gets to the four, there will be a single amendment drafted that reconciles the three that will be a dash seven, like we saw yesterday in the other committee where they had to correct the bill because they printed the wrong amendment into a bill.
Was that true? Will it be one amendment?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, would you see, if you look at the top of dash 3 and dash 4, what it says delete, on page 1, deletes line 4 through 30. It says the same thing in both bills. And then delete pages 2 through 8, and I assume that's the whole bill. And then what it is, it's a substitution. And I think they differ in just one or two points, the points that were mentioned, when they are combined in one amendment, meaning that replaces the bill. They will combine in that the two distinguishing factors in each bill. A plus B.
Right.
And then, Madam Chair, members of the committee, if you adopt the dash 6, which is totally different, they'll combine A, B, and then C. And that will give you a bill of A, B, and C in one draft, which I assume we the printed bill, which would be the 7th amendment.
Okay, so in our bill folder, when it gets to the floor, we'll have one amendment?
Madam Chair, when it gets to the floor, you'll have one bill, an engross bill, plus one amendment,
okay.
Which will be identical, except one will have a...
Okay.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. All right. So here we are, back to the decision on the dash 3 and 4 amendments and the
clarity
dash 6.
Clarity or no clarity?
Madam Chair, that's clear as mud. I'm going to move the dash 3 amendments to Senate Bill 234.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 3 amendment to Senate Bill 234. Is there any discussion? Any objections? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 234.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 234. Discussion? Objection? So ordered.
Move the dash 6 amendments to Senate Bill 234, Madam Chair.
Senator Starr has moved the dash 6 amendment to Senate Bill 234. Discussion? Mm-hmm. Objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Move Senate Bill 234 as amended multiply to the Senate floor.
Yes, a recommendation and a prayer. Senator Starr has moved the Senate Bill 234 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Senator Whitson.
Chair Bullock, I will support this bill, but I would reserve the right to vote against it on the floor because I have no idea what you're talking about, and I really don't have the will to figure it out today.
I understand fully, Senator Whitson. This bill has been quite a wild journey for all concerned. Senator Beyer, did you have any comments?
No, I'm fine.
Okay. All right. No objection, then. So ordered. Who'd like to carry this?
Senator Walker. She's with the Law Commission.
Oh, Senator Pachecki.
I was going to say Ringo, but I think Walker gets first.
Thank you
at
for
it.
Pointing that out and reminding us all, Senator Pachecki. Senator Walker will carry this bill. Lucky her. Thank you all for your patience and diligence. Okay.
229.
I'm
sorry.
Lost. 229. I think that's coming now.
Huh?
Let me
just go to the file. Okay. Now we will open a work session on Senate Bill 229.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 229 comes to you from the Oregon Law Commission, and the bill requires a dependency proceeding to give preference to placement of a child to a person with caregiver relationship to the child. You have the dashboard amendments as a new section bill concerning substitution of appointed counsel and termination of parental rights. It clarifies, I think, the payment process. Ingrid Swenson's here, I assume, in that amendment. Okay. Wendy Johnson is here on the bill. So you have the dashboard amendments before you. And, Madam Chair, going to the dashboard amendments, the key part is the bold language, too. The court may not substitute one appointed counsel for another except pursuant to the policies, procedures, standards, and guidelines there in RS 151216, and that's the policies and procedures of the Public Defense Service Commission.
Okay. We have Ms. Johnson here in the audience, and who else is involved in this?
I believe the amendments probably come from Ingrid Swenson, the State Public Defender's Office.
Is Ingrid here? Oh, she is here. Okay. Ingrid, why don't you come on up and ask questions about the amendment? That's the best. Welcome to the committee, Ms. Johnson.
Thank you. Chair, voting members of the committee, again, for the record, my name is Wendy Johnson with the Oregon Law Commission. Senators will remember that this bill was up for a hearing. The reason it didn't move out is we were considering using it to put some other stuff in. We decided not to do that. So the only amendment you had before that would like you to consider would be the dash fours. Again, the Law Commission has no position on this amendment, but it's a friendly amendment. It just seems to be a cleanup, but again, the Commission has not reviewed it. It was an amendment request from Oregon Public Defense Services from Ingrid Swenson, and so you'll just see that it's a cleanup that just happened to fit under our relating clause.
Would you like to elaborate on that, on the dash four amendment?
I would. Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Ingrid Swenson, Office of Public Defense Services. We appreciate the Commission allowing us to offer this amendment in connection with their bill. It is just a minor cleanup proposal. In the last session, in House Bill 2074, the legislature required that before the court substitutes one appointed lawyer for another appointed lawyer in a case, either a juvenile case, a criminal case, on both the trial and the appellate level, that the court comply with the policies of the Office of Public Defense Services about those substitutions. At the time the measure was passed, there was an effort to identify each of the statutes which related to the appointment of counsel, but somehow this one was missed, the appointment of counsel in termination of parental rights cases, and for that reason we asked the Law Commission if we could insert this amendment in this bill to cover that appointment authority. I have attached to the testimony which I provided to you a copy of the substitution policy which was adopted by the Public Defense Services Commission in response to House Bill 2074, and that talks about what the court will do in connection with a request for a substitution of counsel. I'd be happy to answer any questions.
And the Law Commission, again, is neutral on this. Okay. Senator Pruzanski, did you have any questions or comments on this?
I don't. It sounds like there was an oversight that just needs to be corrected. That would have been taken care of in 2003 if it was had been seen at that time.
Thank you. All right. Senator Starr, do you have a motion on the Dash 4 Amendment?
I move Senate Bill. Dash 4 amendments to Senate Bill 229.
Senator Starr moves the Dash 4 amendment to Senate Bill 229. Is there any discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Starr.
Senate Bill 229. And as amended to the floor of the due pass recommendation.
Senator Starr moves Senate Bill 229 as amended to the Senate floor with a due pass recommendation. Discussion? Objection? So ordered. Senator Walker gets to carry this one, too.
Walker's a carrier.
Walker's a carrier because she's a member of the Law Commission. Okie dokie. Let's see. Let me get 548. Okay, we will open a work session on Senate Bill. I think you know what's it. On Senate Bill 965.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. Senate Bill 965 comes to you from the Committee on Rules, creates a cause of action for invasion of personal privacy. We have the Dash 4 amendments, creates additional grounds for the cause of action in circumstances where the defendant, without the consent of the plaintiff, knowingly disseminates a visual recording of the plaintiff as stated nudity in place and circumstances where the plaintiff had a reasonable expectation of personal privacy. The new provision will apply to conduct occurring after May 1, 2004.
Okay.
So you should have, I believe, the Dash 4 amendments in front of you.
I'm in trouble finding.
You have the Dash 4,
I don't either.
I have the Dash 3.
I have 3s also.
Okay, so basically the amendment would make it retroactive.
Yep. Could I just ask counsel? On the retroactivity, I know this is a civil cause. We're not concerned with that having any type of
ex post facto problem. Madam Chair, members of the committee, ex post facto only applies in criminal law situations.
Right. Just catches me on.
Maybe if we put this bill over for a second, we'd have a chance to get to our office and see if the Dash 4 amendments are here. From what I can see, the only difference between the Dash 4 and the Dash 3 is in line 10, we fill in the 5104.
May 1.
Is it?
Well, isn't it? I mean, I'm just reading what's off here. Oh, that's a dash 3, so we may have a different date on the dash fours?
The staff measure summary that I received mentions the dash four, and I think what it was, the dash three was sent down to the Legislative Council's office. Page one, the only page, line 10, occurs on or after, and it was filling in the
It's got a blank.
Yeah, I know that. And I'm also looking at the summary. The summary seems to be referencing dash threes, and Senator Byer asked me what was the date, and I'm just assuming it's the date of 5104. But then I was just wondering whether or not the dash fours was actually asking for a different date than what's in this summary.
The summary I have says dash four is the main one.
Oh, you got a dash four? I don't have that one.
I have four copies of that summary.
There we go.
Oh, I just got a summary referencing dash fours.
So we don't have a dash four amendment, and
there it doesn't say what the date is.
We can't.
Chair, maybe if we put this over just for 20 minutes.
Yeah, let's close the work session.
I'll ask Dale to go to the office and ask again to see if the amendments are where they are. We'll go to the council's office. If Patsy can hear me. 965, we're looking for the dash four amendments, hopefully coming up to the Legislative Council's office. Roll it, prove it.
Okay.
We've
got a conspiracy going on.
Well, I've seen this before, and I guess I'd like to ask staff, we've got the same staff measure summary dated the same date and same time to say two different things. I don't see that's possible.
Yeah, mine refers to dash threes, and Senator Byers refers to dash four, but it's the same date and everything.
The committee, I'm
there are no fours. That's why I gave you a corrected with a three. Joe just mistyped when he sent out the SMS. There are no fours.
Gotcha.
Okay, well, we can't do this with a blank spot in it, so we will close the work session on Senate Bill 965.
Yeah. When we see the same date and time, you assume the words are going to be the same.
So sounds like we will have a dash for it at some point.
We will have a dash for it at some time point because the chair is not willing to give up on this bill. Now we will, I think, while there's still people here, I think we will put over action on Senate Bill 216. We'll just roll that over to tomorrow and see where we are. We will move Senate Bill 333 to tomorrow.
Madam Chair, do you want to move 965 to tomorrow too?
Yes, let's move 965 to tomorrow and 333, and that should do it. And so the remaining bill on our list is Senate Bill 304.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, Senate Bill 304 comes to you to committee at the request of Senator Joan Jukes. It relates to asbestos revised product liability civil actions for damages resulting from asbestos-related disease claims. Commits commencement of such actions otherwise spared solely by expiration of statute of limitations before January 2008. And you should have before you the dash one amendments, which would limit the scope of the revival of asbestos-related claims to those based on exposure from 1940 to 1987. The rationale behind the amendment is that ORS 3907 already provides specific cause of action based on asbestos-related damages within 2 years of discovery.
Okay. Stuff here. You said the dash two amendments, and then the dash one amendments were.
There's dash two.
So I have a dash one amendment as well.
I do too.
Dash one has no dates in it.
I got both.
I think dash two supersedes. I lost track of this bill a little bit.
Dash one says in line five of the printed bill, if you dismiss, and the dash one says delete lines 4 through 19.
You know, we have the
stuff.
Excuse me?
Dash twos are gutting stuff.
Right.
Okay, we have the author of the bill here, Ann Samuelson, so I apologize. We are a little adrift without our counsel here. So welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, members of the committee, for the record, my name is Ann Samuelson. I'm the daughter of Stan Grimberg, who died of mesothelioma. And I'm actually a plumbing contractor, so this lawmaking business is a little new to me. But so far, it's been a positive experience. I just wanted to interject. I won't take a lot of time. I think the revisions are appropriate just when you think you can't hone anything down anymore. It gets honed down more. Joe O'Leary did a great job. He actually directly had contact with Stephen Kazin out of Oakland, who's testified before the U.S. Senate on asbestos litigation for many years and is probably one of the most seasoned people on this sort of thing that I know, that I could find, and has worked with him on this, and I think it's all real sound and good and specific to asbestos, which is what my cause was.
The dash twos over the dash ones.
Correct, yeah. Okay. Okay, well, I had talked with Mr. O'Leary about this, and you worked with him
yes.
on these, and we had no opposition expressed to this bill during the hearing, and we have the dash two amendments in front of us, and it all depends on whether Senator Starr is willing to make a motion.
Madam Chair, I'm really confused here again by the staff measure summary telling us that the dash ones limit the scope based on exposure from 1940 to 1987, and I don't see anything in the dash ones that says anything about those dates.
Council?
Madam Chair, members of the committee, this is just a quick one, but I think the dash one amends the original bill, and I think the dash two, as Senator Beyer pointed out, is a gut and stuff because it does mention the provisions of this section apply to a cause of action for damage resulting from asbestos related disease that arose after January 1, 1940 and before January 1, 1987. So at least as it relates to the dash two amendments, that language is in there, and I assume it would be with the original bill as amended by the dash one, it would also be in there.
Senator Pisanski?
Madam Chair, I think this may be another typo, as we just heard from our staff, Patsy Woods. It appears to me that the summaries should be dash two because it's much more specific and actually refers to the dates
right.
that are in the dash two. So I'm assuming that's a topographical error where it says dash one in the summary, it should be dash two.
Yeah, we'll have to describe exactly what's in the dash two.
And from my understanding and from what our witnesses testified to, after the dash ones were drafted and the date on those was January 18th, 3 months later, we have the dash twos, and I would assume, based on the conversations, it was determined that it would be better to, let's say, more closely define a narrow window of when the diseases could have occurred, and focusing on that as compared to leaving it as broad without the clarity and the concise language in the dash ones. Bless you.
That's correct. Thank you for doing that. It's thank you. Okay. Thank you. So do we have Senator Starr? Does that clear it up? Because it really does make sense if you look at the dash one as a typo on this staff measure summary.
Well, it appears to me that we don't need the dash ones.
Yeah.
That's correct. We do not.
Since we're simply replacing the original bill with the dash two.
That's correct. And the dash two serves to narrow and clarify the scope of the bill.
Madam Chair.
Senator Starr.
I move the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 304.
Senator Starr has moved the dash two amendments to Senate Bill 304. Is there any discussion? Any objection? So ordered. Who'd like to carry this?
That's right.
Guys, I think I'm tired. Okay. So my apologies, Senator Starr.
Why don't we find out how people are at on this?
Well, you're okay on it, right? Yeah. But you're okay.
Yeah.
If Senator Starr is willing to make a motion, then we will make a motion.
Move Senate Bill 304 as amended to the floor with the DuPass recommendation.
Senator Starr has moved Senate Bill 304 to the Senate floor with the DuPass recommendation. Is there any discussion?
Madam Chair, I'm going to vote against the bill. I just haven't had a chance to look at it close enough to decide if I'm comfortable with this narrow exemption or not. So I'm going to vote against it, and if I change my mind, I'll vote for it on the floor.
Thank you very much. Any other objections? Would you call the roll, Dale?
Senator Beyer?
No.
Senator Prusansky?
Aye.
Senator Walker?
Aye.
Senator Whitsitt?
No.
Vice Chair Starr?
Aye.
Chair Burdick?
Aye. Senator Ringo will carry this bill.
Uh-huh.
Okay.
We have 9:13 and 9:15.
Yeah, we just 9:15 has a fatal flaw, so that won't be returning anytime soon.
It does.
And 9:13 we put over, didn't we?
That was one I didn't hear. I got three.
That's right. 9:30. Yeah, we carried that one over. 2:16. 3:33 and 9:13 are carried over to
9:65 as well. So 9:13 was also carried over. Is 9:65?
Oh, 9:65. Yeah, 9:65 is carried over.
And that's it.
And wait a second. What about 9:13?
I don't think we've done anything on that, Madam Chair.
Okay.
Unless you made that decision before we started.
Yeah, I had it on my to-do list, so maybe I forgot to. So to clarify, Senate Bill 333... 9:13 and 9:65 will be carried over till tomorrow. Senate Judiciary.
Madam Chair, what about 2:16?
Oh, and 2:16.
2:16. We've got four carried over.
Four carried over.
And one.
We'll never see the light of day.
One that went to the graveyard.
One's wounded.
Senate Judiciary is adjourned. Thank you, committee members. I can't believe you got out early again.